Jy is ingeskakel op 100.5 FM en dit is Understanding Autism, ons weeklikse program waar ons met kenners gesels oor hierdie spektrumversteuring. By ons in die ateljee vandag is Renata Stewart. Sy is 'n passievolle en entoesiastiese educator. Welcome. You've been a teacher for 30 years.
Well, it's now 35 years, but I made a change after 30 years. So if I start at the very beginning, I refer to myself as a bit of a pavement special because I've been there, done that, and got that t-shirt, especially when it refers to education. My father was a first-generation Italian who moved, we moved from, back in those days, Rhodesia, now current Zimbabwe. I was 9 years old when I moved to South Africa. My mom was first-generation South African from Wynberg, yeah, in die Kaap, but I went to a whole lot of different schools. So I got to experience education in many different places and in many different ways.
Where did the passion for education start for you?
Well, okay, I'm going to go back to my farm, onto the farm where I lived in Rhodesia. I think just self-discovery is where the passion happened. So I was on the farm, jumping from Hail Bay to the next one and had my own cow. And everything was just about learning. So the environment is what started my passion for learning. Learning about the environment, how things worked on the farm. And also realizing when I went to all these different kinds of schools that the way that I learned was different to everybody else in my class. And that really bugged me because back in the day, and I'm a young 58-year-old, we had the method of teaching and learning called chalk and talk, where the teacher was a sage on the stage and there was no guide on the side. So there was me and everybody else around me could remember things, could memorize the information, could do well in tests, and I didn't. And I learned really, really hard. I would study every single night. And when it came to the schoolwork, I just couldn't retain the information the way the other kids did. In high school, I did standard grade maths. I was told I was useless at it. And that's where the passion started because I realized that there's so many other kids like me out there that just learned differently. What is sad is that when I went into teaching, and my first job was at a state school, a government school, and it was straight back to the good old chalk and talk stuff. So I started playing around, investigating different ways of helping children to appeal to their different learning styles. And that I thought I'd have to break down because there are three different types of learning styles. You can either be a visual learner or a kinetic learner or an auditory. And a lot of the time you're a combination of the above. The most common, if I have to say the word, and I did this many times in the classrooms and with many people, for example, the word apple. So I'm going to ask you guys, what do you see in your head when I say the word apple?
A green apple.
Okay.
So did I.
Okay, so you both saw pictures. So you didn't think of a word. You didn't see the word apple. Now that's fascinating because every single class that I've done that little exercise with said the same thing. They saw a picture of an apple. And there are always some in a class that saw the word apple. That immediately just said to me, well, come on, our minds all work differently. And how do I appeal to those kids who mostly saw the picture of an apple as opposed to the spelling of the word apple?
Were you able to implement this in the classroom? As you say, the mainstream schools that you taught at for 30 years.
In the beginning, you know, I was a young teacher and you kind of just do as you're told and then go home and moan about it. But as I got older and a little bit braver, it got better. Where I started to experience that it can be done was I was invited to go and teach for a friend. It was a rural school where there were, I'm not lying, about 60 different grade 7 learners in the class. And there we were, no space for even for them to put their bags down if they had bags. there certainly weren't enough desks and chairs. And there I was in my early 30s and standing in front of an almost 60 group. Some of the grade 7 kids were 15, 16 years old already. And I'm like, how am I going to get through to this lot with all these different abilities? And just started realizing that if I started appealing to different ways that would make them connect with what they're learning, to take them outside the class just to start off with, and used what I had around me, whether it was leaves on the ground or stones or whatever it was, to get a concept across. So, yes, I was able to, but with great difficulty, because our schooling system does not allow for that. What our schooling system does, and this was a very big part of my frustration, is that as a teacher, you are given a box. And in this box, it says by the end of the year, you have to have ticked all the boxes inside this box. You have to have covered this information. You can only go so far with this other information, so don't go beyond that, even though the kids are capable. And at the end of the year, we want you to make sure that the 30 different individuals sitting in front of you with different learning styles, different genders, different frames of reference, have all got to be able to all fit in the box and be able to say that they've achieved everything that's inside this box, and then they can move on to the next box next year. It's just crazy how that's what it is and what it's like. And the way that you judge how they do in the box and what they do with the box is you give them all the same assessment. So even if there are some fish in the class, you're still going to test them to say part of the test is climbing a tree. Where are we actually meeting the needs of each individual child? It's not happening. If you're creative and if you understand how children need to learn, you don't have to worry about those kids that need to move to learn. Because in my day, it was a case of jy stout, sit, in luister, whereas those kids just learn differently. So it can happen in a normal classroom. Those kids that learn differently or that need to be kinetic, make them stand at the back of the class. Let them move around. So there are ways and means of doing it, but it doesn't just happen easily, no.
When you started out with Free Range Learning Center initially, did people want to burn you at the stake?
Oh, heck yes. You know, anything that's alternative, anything that's the unknown, is completely fear-based. And the minute something is fear-based, people are always looking for targets. And I remember many a conversation with Sana having to come to the protection of how she felt she wanted learning to take place.
And how has that perception changed from then to now?
COVID, one word. It had its disadvantages, but in education, it has the greatest advantage. I'm very grateful for that because people's minds started changing during COVID. All of a sudden, kids were at home. They were online learning. Parents had to suddenly see what teachers were experiencing in classrooms. And what it did was parents are like, here's the information. The teacher on the line or from the pack that I received at school said, my child needs to know this by then. How am I going to do it? And parents started realizing what their children's learning, not in capabilities, but their different learning styles. And so many parents that came out when schools were reopened after COVID went, I don't need to be sending my child back to mainstream because I'm doing my child a disservice. And so gratefully for COVID, it started to open people's minds like this can be done differently. I get it. It's scary to be able to allow your child to go into a system that you don't know what the end result is going to be, because my grandparents, your grandparents, your parents, how did we all experience education? The late Sir Ken Robinson has a lot to say about it. But one of my favorite clips is a paradigm in education is if you look at a car from 50 years ago and you look how it's changed to nowadays, but look at a classroom from 50 years ago and look at what it looks like now. Same old, same old. But COVID got people thinking. So when Sana said, take over, which I did, to try and make that shift from free range was a very, very difficult one. The first thing that I did was purchase a shelf company and started a new sort of company, calling it Free Choice, thinking that if I keep the name Free and change it to Choice, it would be a little bit more lenient on people and their preconceived ideas of what free ranging actually means, because people heard free range and they thought chickens. People have a problem.
Feral children.
Exactly. Can you imagine? So hence the name change. We are actually in the process now of readdressing and looking at the name change again, because what needs to happen, and we need to be clever about this, is you don't want to scare people too quickly. People have preconceived ideas. And when you're working with the unknown is we don't live in Finland. The unknown is we don't know that what you're doing with our children, it might be slightly different, or you're approaching that it's different to the way schools do it. So we don't know how you're doing it and how you're getting there and how do you pass to the next grade and why don't you write tests? All these fears of the unknown. So free choice gave people and seems to give people the idea that word free scares a lot of people. What does that free actually mean? The irony being that with freedom comes a lot more responsibility than without freedom. So it has been a journey. We've had the center open for the last 3 years. We are what I call truly inclusive. I have read many a white paper document, and there's a beautiful one on inclusivity in the classroom where the government paper talks about straddling and scaffolding. And what that means is being able to meet children where they're at, being child-focused. So instead of having the box, I love this box analogy, you get who is the box. The child becomes the box, and you open up that box. And you can have varying genders, varying ability levels, varying special needs, varying whatever it is within one group, and you can still be child-focused. We have children at the center who are gifted children. We have a young lady in particular who just turned 12 years old, but is ready to write her Cambridge IGCSE exams. We have children at the center who are high-functioning autistic children. They are the most phenomenal, misunderstood children out there. And just because they don't show learning or display on a piece of paper the way that society depicts as how we would like to determine where you're at, they do it differently. And it just doesn't mean that they are stupid, you know, for trying to find a better word. They just need to learn differently. So we are able to meet those needs of all the different children of varying abilities and still cover a curriculum. We chose to use as our support structure and our guideline the Cambridge curriculum because it is internationally recognized and the priority for it is not heavy content. And that is another thing, the difference between in schools when you've got a huge class of 30 plus children and you're trying to meet the needs of everybody, the quickest way to get results is to teach a procedure and not to teach a concept. The wonder of Cambridge is that it looks at conceptualizing rather than just straightforward procedure. Procedure has its place. Please don't ever get me wrong about that. But if you learn a formula off by heart and you suddenly can't remember in a test what it is, you've tried to memorize the procedure. But if you've understood what the concept is behind it and how you derived it, you will very quickly be able to come to that formula afterwards. So a big part of choosing Cambridge was because it encourages thinking skills, particularly the wonderful Bloom's Taxonomy higher order thinking skills, which is interpretation, analysis, and so on. It makes children think. And it is not content loaded, because content, please, in the day of technology that we have, if you want content, press a button and you will get content. But how you apply that content is much more important than the content itself. There are some non-negotiables. If you have to end up in a South African system, ultimately. And some of them are, for example, maths. So maths would be something that is done by us. Maths and English are two basics, as well as Afrikaans. But the way that you approach those subjects is by using that gestalt, using that holistic way of learning. And that is through the senses. Our skin is our biggest organ of our body. People forget that. And you learn by doing. You learn by feeling. You learn by touching. You learn by smelling. You learn by so many. And the more of the senses that you use, the more that you are going to remember what it is that you are doing. So we like to do quite a lot of project-based learning. And in that way, it's going to appeal to each one of the different children. So our high-functioning autism children, we've got two in particular that have exceptional mechanical minds. With project-based learning, those that need to do more of the sort of theory, they're able to do that. But the other kids can apply that, build, the instruction could be build a mechanical arm. And the kids will be able to do that. I had a 10-year-old last year. We had a science project under the sea. And he asked if he could build a sea crab. And the Japanese sea crab, he built this life-size thing with moving parts. And he's one of our high-functioning autistic kids.
How important is early intervention in teaching of autistic children?
Unfortunately, that's not my area of expertise at all. But what I do know, whether you're autistic or whether not, it doesn't matter. Early intervention, no matter when, is key to everything. One particular area of misunderstanding that parents have as well is that just because you are learning in a different way, that you might not be reaching or achieving your foundational milestones at the same time. I think it's something we need to remember as well, that if you've got, you know, the foundation phase is called that for a particular reason. And if your child is not reading in grade one, because I know like they get their first readers really quickly and really soon, you know, not to panic about it. Having said that, one of the biggest challenges that I'm finding at our learning center is that parents are apprehensive to bring their children when they're in grade one, two, or three. And I think that that could be part of it, because a lot of people are thinking, is my child receiving the foundational milestones that they need to be receiving in order for them to be able to read and write? And as soon as you approach that differently, that fear factor kicks in again. So you do. Reading is reading. Writing is writing. So no matter where you're doing it, if you're doing it differently, does it mean that you're still not going to be doing it? No, you still will be doing it.
Taking into account all your years of experience, and imagine you being a parent. Your children needs to go to school. Do you think going the school route is better, or would you rather homeschool?
Homeschooling, wow, okay. No, I wouldn't homeschool. I had my own children in my class when I was teaching. It didn't work out very well. So that's not a very big reason why I would. But I was very privileged with my two children to be able for them to experience schooling slightly differently. And from my own experience growing up, one thing that I do know is that normal schooling isn't for everybody. And my personal choice as a parent, I would have gone schooling, but with a difference. the way that we do it at Free Choice.
What can parents do to try and determine their child's learning style or where their child is at?
That's a good question. So it is very difficult to determine with younger children where they're at. I mean, even something as simple as, is my child left-handed or right-handed? Those kind of things only really materialize later. So awareness is key to everything. Parents know their children better than anybody else. Just by giving your child an instruction, if they come back with what you've instructed them to do, then you will know that they're auditory. If you have to realize, or you have to say something, be a bit more specific, like you'll find they come back and they don't know where it is. Oh, maybe go and look on top of mom's red dressing table. Maybe that then shows you that they're a bit more visual. And if they can't sit still at the dinner table, then they might need to learn kinesthetically. My daughter was a kinesthetic together with auditory style learner. And we did things like put whiteboards up around in her bedroom, and she would walk from whiteboard to whiteboard doing her learning and eating popcorn and all of that. So it takes a while for you to realize, but in practice, do all three. And that's what should be happening in our classrooms. We should be appealing to the visual, the kinesthetic, and the auditory. And you can bring in that in every single lesson. It's not that hard to do. As a parent, you'll soon find out you know your children.
So obviously, kinesthetic, is yes. That learning by movement?
Yes, yes.
And so, tactile learners, by touching and feeling.
Yeah, yeah. So what they've also found, there's just so many things that have happened. I have a son that is sensory. He doesn't like things that, labels in his shirts. And, he's now almost a 30-year-old adult. But that affected his learning when he was in the classroom. And that is something else that's also never thought of, is that child that can't sit still in your class. It might be because they sensory defensive. The label that's sitting in their shirt is bugging them, and the funny feel of their school pants is bugging them, and the tie is too tight, classrooms next door to the toilet and smell that I can't learn. There's just so many things that affect learning that we forget about.
A teacher plays a very big role in the teaching process. When I was at school, I had a teacher who shall remain nameless, who made us stand on our knees in the classroom if we misbehaved. And she, to make that a punishment, would never sweep out the class. So you would stand on your knees in sand or pebbles because it's a punishment. And then you still had to remember facts and dates in the history class. She will know who she is. I can't remember a thing from those classes.
I'm not surprised. I'm sorry you had to experience that. Unfortunately, that's just like with anything in life. There are people out there that shouldn't be doing what they are doing. And yet, I think we have to just keep focusing on the positive, that there are some phenomenal teachers out there that are doing phenomenal work. And I salute and take my hat off to every single one of them, because you're not just a teacher. You're a nurse, you're a mom, you're a dad. You are everything to those children, and it's indeed a calling, and one that I'm very grateful and very blessed to still be doing.
Ons gesels met Renato Stewart van Free Choice, en jy was ingeskakel op Understanding Autism op 100.5 FM.